what's here. You get to hear what came here before, and it's really great. It's an education that everybody needs to hear these incredible songs. It's just an amazing opportunity for local and regional musicians.
Listen for his music and other independent artists here on KPFT Houston.
Hi, I'm Mel.
And I'm Ro.
We're from Shame on Me.
And you're listening to KPFT Houston.
Thank you. And for you, I'm so grateful for all the things you helped me do. All the ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks is a feel-good broadcast that gives people the chance to thank someone who had a positive and profound impact in their life.
Good evening, everyone. This is Rand with Thanks, a feel-good broadcast on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston, Texas. And tonight, we are breaking format. And I apologize to you that we'll be listening to this in another format in a few weeks down the road. But this is not a national story or a story of national significance. This is a Harris County, Texas local story tonight. And we have two candidates with us tonight that are competing in the Democratic primary for the 209th Judicial District Court here in Houston. There's a Judge Brian Warren and Sissy Kyles. I guess you guys want to say hello.
Good morning. Thank you. Or good afternoon at this point. Sorry about that. Thank you for having me.
Hi. Good evening, everybody.
Okay. So anyway, at least this is probably be the closest thing it will have to being a regular episode. And so my late mother doesn't crawl out from her grave and slap me. We're going to start with you first, Sissy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, just give me a very condensed version of your background, where you grew up, where you went to school.
Okay. My name is Isidra Sissy Kyles, and Sissy, of course, is my nickname. I grew up in Jasper, Texas, which is what's considered the Piney Woods or Deep East Texas. And I graduated from Kirbyville High School. So I went to school in Jasper from first grade, from kindergarten through seventh grade, eighth grade, started in Kirbyville. Graduated from Kirbyville High School and then went on to college and law school.
And where did you go to college?
I initially went to University of North Texas for 2 years. And then when I was sure I wanted to be a criminal justice major, I transferred to Sam Houston.
Well, that makes my office mate, Chris Tritico, very happy. And where did you go to law school?
I went to Thurgood.
And Judge Warren, how about a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I have a little more complicated background. I'm originally from New York City. I went to school in Virginia, kind of started to fall in love with the South. After undergrad, I got a job working in London, England. I worked there for a year and decided I wanted to go to law school, moved down to Texas, went to St. Mary's Law School for law school. And after that, I immediately started working at the Harris County District Attorney's Office, worked there for 6 years. I was undefeated in the last 4 years. I was there as a prosecutor. I went to become a criminal defense attorney after that. I was the youngest person for a very long time on the CJA, which is a federal appointed list. Then I got old. And then 2019, I won. I assumed the bench. In 2018, I just decided that we needed better Democratic judges. We needed better, more qualified people for stepping up. We needed change, and that's why I ran. I've been the judge of the 209th District Court since 2019.
And Sissy, why don't you touch on your legal career, starting from when you graduated TSU?
So I graduated TSU in 1995. When I graduated, so my story is a little different. It's not the traditional story. When I graduated in 1995, I also met who later became my ex-husband 2 months before graduation. So in March of 95, I met him, and he was living in Georgia. So I moved to Georgia immediately after graduation. Well, in October, because I got married that same October. So this all happened in 6 months. So I lived in Atlanta for 2 years and then moved to L.A. for a year and then moved to Memphis and Little Rock and then back to Houston in 2000.
So when did you started practicing law?
So I started practicing law in 2016. I took the bar exam in 2012 and at that time, I was working for Harris County Probation. I was with Harris County Probation for 10 years, for well, actually for about 9.5 years. So I was in a substance abuse unit initially, and then I ended my last 6 years as a sex offender officer.
And when did you stop working for the probation department?
In 2016.
So you've been a practicing lawyer for 9 years. You've been a licensed lawyer, but you've been practicing law for 9 years.
Exactly.
Okay. Jumping to you, Judge Warren, why did you want to become a lawyer?
When I was working in London, just kind of seeing how the world worked, it was just this education. I thought, this is how you make a difference in the world, knowing how the rules are written and how to play by them. And then when I went to law school, I fell in love with trial work and decided I wanted to be a prosecutor. I wanted to give back to the community and seek justice for victims.
And Ms. Kiles, why did you want to become a lawyer?
So for me, it's just always been, so I grew up a preacher's kid. And so because I grew up a preacher's kid, I was always either singing or talking. And my talking turned into debates, even though that was not the goal. And I would often hear people say, you're probably going to be a lawyer one day. And I think I just internalized that. And also I just, because I grew up in the South, I grew up in Jasper, Texas, I've seen a lot, and I knew that the only way for me to correct anything that I've seen is to be in a position where I could do that, and being a lawyer was one of the quickest ways, I thought, to do that.
Oh, did you, well, you were, you worked in the probation department,
mm-hmm.
So did you, in your 9 years, did you immediately gravitate towards criminal defense?
Absolutely. So, and let me backtrack. So I took the bar in 2002. Once I passed the bar, I started practicing law. I did not practice full time until 2016. Because I was working at the probation department, Harris County would not allow me to practice law in Harris County. I could only practice law in other parts of Texas.
But you were a full-time probation officer as well.
I was a full-time probation officer.
Okay. So that would be, as I literally, as my wife tells me, in your overabundance of spare time. So that would have been, and that's very tongue-in-cheek, that would have been in the overabundance of your spare time.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, and I'm one of the things that I read is I've never met you before, but on your site, then you're running for office, it says you've handled thousands of cases, including complicated felonies.
Right.
So was that in that 9 years you've handled thousands of cases?
So I don't know where you saw thousands, but thousands might actually be pretty accurate. I am on 3 court-appointed lists, so I practice criminal law every day. I might not be practicing it right here in Harris County, but I am on 3 court-appointed lists.
And what are those 3?
Jasper County, Newton County, Tyler County. Those are the appointed lists that I'm on. But I've also practiced criminal cases in Waller County, Montgomery County, Chambers County. So I have been across this. I've been over the state of Texas.
Okay. And what is your idea of a complicated felony? Because that caught my attention when you said
a complicated felony to me, I would say the most complicated for me has been my murder cases. Those would be the most complicated. Also, I just finished a joint trial in Newton County. That was a aggravated assault against a public servant. That was a joint trial. There were two different defendants.
Okay, well, you couldn't have been representing them at this. Someone else was representing the other defendant. Okay,
right, exactly.
Okay. So, how many jury trials have you? You know the difference between first chair and second chair.
Absolutely.
Okay, and it is as I get in my golden years, mm-hmm. I tend to have another attorney trying cases with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a Kurt Vonnegut book. I don't know if I'm realizing when I'm finally going to lose my mind one day, but at least I have someone there as a check and balance. But anyway, how many cases have you tried as first chair from start to finish?
So I don't have a number, but all of my cases I've been first chair. I've never had any. My only case that I was not first chair, I was actually fourth chair. It was my very first case. When I left the probation department in August of 2016, I left on a Friday. That Monday, I started a trial. There were 4 of us on the defense team. We were all sorority. We all went to Sam Houston together, pitched together, and we all tried that case.
Okay, but I'm ready to go, and this can haunt me one day. Responsive, but approximately how many cases have you? Because I've 42 years, and the longer I practice, the longer I try. Paul Moore, lawyer in our office, being
right.
So anyway, but I would say when I went to put together a list of cases I tried, which for any lawyers out there listening, do it as you go along. It's much more difficult to
go back.
But it was in 42 or under. How many? And myself, first chair, it was less than that. Mm-hmm. So how many have you first chaired from voir dire to jury verdict?
All of them. With the exception, if you're looking for a number, I'm not going to be able to give you a number. But what I can tell you is that all of the cases that I've tried, I have tried them from start to finish myself, with the exception of the one case. So I think I actually was responsive earlier. I just didn't give you a number.
Can you even give me an approximation? Is it under 100? Is it under 50?
It's definitely under 100.
Is it under,
sure. I don't know. You're not going to pin me down to a number.
Okay.
Because
in all fairness, I'm getting ready to ask Judge Warren, how many cases have you tried?
As a prosecutor and defense attorney, I've tried about 75 cases. As a judge, I've sat in over 100. So approximately 175 cases statewide. These are all in Harris County, which I think is important. Like, let's talk about our experience in Harris County, picking Harris County juries, practicing law in Harris County.
And I will, having picked juries in Chambers County, its geography makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. In different counties, especially Jasper, which is over 85% Republican, what the community expects out there is different than what our community expects.
So, well, I don't know that that's true, because I'm from Jasper, and I think I can probably speak better on that as far as what the community expects. I don't know that the expectations are that much different. People expect to be treated fairly and with impartiality. That doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat, and it doesn't matter if you're in Jasper or Harris County.
I think the judge may have been referring to the juries, what they expect. Because I know that Chambers County, when I pick juries out there, that a lot of them come from Mount Bellevue, and that's much more conservative than Harris County. But let me ask you this question. How many cases have you tried first chair in Harris County?
I haven't tried any cases in Harris County. I never indicated that I did.
No, I was just asking because we have people listening that are right. Going to decide.
Well, let me say this. In Harris County, it's very easy to figure that out. And the reason I know that is because there were people who were researching me more than I was even researching myself. There's this thing called the Harris County Listserv. I'm sure you're probably familiar with it.
Yes.
So the listserv, I made the mistake of going on the listserv once. And when I did that, I noticed people were writing my narrative. And the only reason I joined the listserv was because people were coming back saying, hey, you might want to go introduce yourself. And so I did. And when I did that, I learned things about myself that I didn't even know. There were people writing my narrative. And so one reason I even wanted to come on your show tonight was so that I could tell my own story.
And that's what I hope we're able to do. But which brings me, because having read those comments on the listserv, I've been a member of HCCLA for more years than I care to count. Some years were great years, some years not so much when they tried to run me out of town on a rail. But still, the point is that at least you have your finger on the pulse of what's going on in the Harris County criminal lawyers community. Mm-hmm. And I know that I guess I wasn't really planning on going there, but Judge Warren is a beloved judge by both the defense and prosecutors, and he is very highly rated. So I guess everyone, as they believe that they asked you, like, why did you pick Judge Warren to run against when there's so many judges that aren't as beloved?
So let
beloved.
Me be right. So let me be clear, very clear on this. I did not choose to run against Judge Brian Warren. I chose to run for a seat that is a public seat. It is an elected seat. And I had the right to run for that seat as much as any other seat. Now, the people on the listserv were very adamant about the fact that I should have run against a black woman. I didn't think of it as I'm running against a non-black woman. I didn't bring race into it. I simply ran for a seat. Not against him. I knew nothing of him. I didn't know Judge Warren.
It's because you don't practice in our county,
I still don't know Judge Warren, but I know quite a few judges. That was a really snide remark. I know a lot of judges in Harris County. I did not know you. And also, let me be clear about this, since you wanted to go there. Let me be clear about this. In 2012, when I took the bar exam, Judge Warren, I don't remember where you were, but you made a statement like, I guess she was trying to pass the bar all that time. First of all, I graduated, as I explained earlier.
Ma'am, this is the first time we've ever talked. I
don't have to hold on because I have the microphone, like literally. So in 1995, when I graduated, I explained the trajectory of how my life went from 95 until I decided to take the bar exam because it was my decision when I took it. It was only my decision. That was it.
And I understand that. And was there something, in all fairness? I've never interviewed two politicians at the same time.
We're lawyers, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to advocate for ourselves.
Yes.
You know, and it's kind of natural. I mean, you've previously run for an appellate bench without filing an appeal. And now, according to what the Chronicle said, if it's different, I'm happy to look it up. And you're happy to tell me what appeal you did, that's fine. And now you want to run for a Harris County judge. Obviously, because you're here.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've never tried a criminal case in Harris County. You've had one felony in the last 4 years.
Okay.
Case in Harris County in 4 years, according to public data.
One case in 4 years?
Yes, and one felony case in 4 years.
Okay.
In Harris County.
Okay. And what is your point? Because my point is this. I have the same JD that you have, and you too, Rand, for that matter. I have a JD. I practice law. I meet the qualifications to run for judge. Now, if the purpose of this is to try to communicate to the community that I'm not qualified, I say let the community decide.
And actually, that's what I'm trying to do, to let them make their own choice.
Absolutely.
So, but I'm not still sure about why you picked the 209th, because even though they may have said you can run against an African-American female, there's probably a few white people that could be bumped off the bench too that aren't very well reviewed.
I didn't look at specific people, Rand. I did not. I wasn't running against him. I picked a seat, which is the 209th. That is what I decided to run for. It was that simple. I can't make it this big thing that people have tried to make it, because there is no big thing. It was a court. There was a court. There was a judge whose seat was open for me to run for, and I ran for it, and I'm still running for it.
So you just – and I just want to move on, because I don't want to spend all evening discussing this. Is you just, like, randomly picked the 209th?
It was between the 209th, the 232nd, and one of the county courts. I don't remember which one it was. Maybe 7. I don't remember which one it was. But I made a decision between the 232nd and the 209th.
And why did you pick a district court over a county court?
Because I just wanted to.
Okay. All right. So let's move on. What distinguishes... Let me, I guess, go back to Judge Warren.
Yes, sir.
What distinguishes you, and you'll get the same question, from your opponent?
I've practiced law and criminal law in Harris County for the last 25 years. I've never met Ms. Kiles before. Doesn't mean she hasn't been down there. When I look up on the clerk's office, she's had one felony case in the last year. I am the highest rated criminal judge. I've never been overrated or overruled, rather. And in this last two bar polls, I was over at 96, rated excellent. I was the 2022 Texas Judge of the Year. I've stood up to Judge Abbott or Governor Abbott. I actually found his orders during COVID unconstitutional. I kicked sand in his face. And now I'm on a board that he's made to teach other judges how to handle sexual assault cases and child sexual assault cases. I've handled every single kind of case you can have in criminal court. I tried the last death penalty case for me and Veronica Nelson. I don't know who ended up first. We kind of started at the same time. But the two of us have tried the last death penalty case. I've handled a federal death penalty case. I'm the youngest person in the history of Texas to be appointed on a federal death penalty case. Experience matters. In this race, experience and judgment matters. Also, when the governor has made rules and put in place rules to take Democratic judges off the benches in large cities, it matters that you're not getting reversed. It matters that you're not letting the wrong people out of jail who are recommitting crimes. All of these things matter. This is why I'm rated excellent by both prosecutors and defense attorneys. I also have one of the lowest dockets. I have one of the lowest jail dockets as well. I think this is what distinguished me, a lifetime of practicing law in criminal court in Harris County, as opposed to someone who's handled one case in the last 4 years.
And what distinguishes you from Judge Warren?
What distinguishes me is the fact that I am a criminal defense attorney, just as he is. Well, I don't know if he was a criminal defense attorney.
I was a criminal defense attorney for 12 years, ma'am.
Okay. CJA list. I just said I didn't know. Okay, you're done. It's my turn. I am a criminal defense attorney, okay? As far as what distinguishes us, I mean, number one, there's the physical appearance. That distinguishes us. We're different in that. Secondly, he can come across as very condescending. I try not to do that. So that distinguishes me. As far as experience, before he was a judge, how much experience did he have as a judge? Before he was an attorney, how much experience did he have as an attorney? People constantly talk about, you don't have experience, you don't have experience, but no one has experience doing anything until they do it. Before he was a judge, he didn't have experience as a judge.
But I think we can all agree that when we appear in front of a judge, we want to make sure that they have the experience as a lawyer to rule correctly.
Experience as a lawyer. And you cannot contradict is my experience. What you can say is I don't practice law a lot in Harris County, but there is a pretty weak wind that can only blow in one direction. Okay. I practice law across the state of Texas. The fact that you might have only practiced in Harris County, that's not my fault or my problem. I can say I have practiced law across Texas.
Going back to his experience, have you ever first chaired a murder trial from start to finish?
Yes, I was the only chair. Not only first chair, the only chair.
And in what county did that take place?
That was in Newton County, and it was last year.
And what type of, because a lot of lawyers are listening in, what type of experts were called in that case?
What types of experts were called in that case? I don't remember who the experts were.
And Rand, sometimes on murder cases, it's not necessary. It could be on a whodunit, whether CDRs, which are the cell phone records. Obviously, it could be experts. A lot of times, as you know, some of the stuff is on video, and it's just whether or not someone acted in self-defense.
Yes. So,
not every case requires an expert, although I'm happy to give them when asked. But
and actually, it's funny, that's one of my questions later. No, because you mentioned complicated felonies. So when I think of complicated felonies, it's not is it self-defense? It's like you're looking at ballistics, you're looking at DNA, you're looking at cell phone records, the type of stuff that Paul Morgan really excels with, and I'm there scratching my head. So anyway, that's when you said complicated, that's what I think of, or alternatively, a large financial crime case where you're looking at all these records like insurance fraud, or as it's all over the state, clinic fraud, where they have these bogus insurance claims because they manufacture all the medical. That's what I think of when I think of complicated felonies.
And that's what you think of.
Well, what do you think of when you think of?
When I think of complicated, I think of the nature of the case. If it's a possession of marijuana, I'm not thinking of that as a complicated case at all. That's simply not complicated. We all know that cases have different levels, and the different levels often coincide with the complexity of the case. If it's a, again, if it's a possession of marijuana, that's not complicated to me. If it's aggravated assault, well, then it gets a little more complicated. If it's a robbery case, it gets more complicated. Aggravated sexual assault of a child. The complexity of the case oftentimes is coincides with the actual nature of the case.
Gotcha. Okay, so you're thinking more of the nature of the case than what's involved with the evidence. Mm-hmm. Okay. So everyone associated with this station is getting ready to kill me because I'm about 10 minutes late. But this is Rand here on Thanks, a Feel Good Broadcast, KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston, Texas. And for those of you just joining us and thinking that tonight's episode is different from any other, it is. We're here with Judge Brian Warren and Yesidra Sissy Kyles. And they are both Democrats running for the – they'll be in the next primary election. And what date is that election? I should know.
The runoff?
Yes.
The runoff date is May 26th.
Okay.
Early voting is May 18th.
For the 209th Judicial District Court. So, back to you, Sissy. What, knowing Judge Brian Warren, what of his policies would you like to change?
I don't know, Judge. He just told you. We've never met. I have not researched him. I don't research him. I don't even talk about him. He's had things to say about me. I've not had anything to say about him because I haven't researched him. Again, I'm not running against him. I'm running for the 209th. That's just it.
All right. Then let me back up a little further and let's talk about Harris County. Mm-hmm. Are there any policies that you see that other judges do or you've heard that they do that you want to change?
As far as policies are concerned, I don't know that I would necessarily change them. I am more focused on when I get on the bench, the policies that I will implement, and I will discuss those at a later date, not right now, but I'm not so much concerned with changing his policies. I don't know what his policies are. I don't know him.
Judge, would you like to respond?
Absolutely. I can tell you what I've done since I've been on the bench. So I am.
Is that the question?
I was just going to tell you the policies I've implemented on the bench.
Okay.
If I'm not
responsive. That's fine. No, that's responsive.
Okay. If I misunderstood your question, please.
No, let's.
So since I got on the bench, as you know, the 209th had the highest docket when I got on the bench. It is now in the bottom. I've implemented a federal style discovery order, which now more than half of the district courts in Harris County have implemented. I've gotten our jail numbers way, way down. I have the docket and the 209th the lowest it's been in almost two decades. Those are proven policies that work. They keep our community safe. And I'd like the chance to keep on doing it.
And I don't think I asked you this question.
Yes, sir.
Why did you run to be a judge?
As you know, in 2016, we had almost all Republican judges. They did things that I didn't think were right. They did things that I didn't think were fair. I have young children. I live in the city. I work in the city. And I was running it. A little softball to you, but I was running. And as everybody knows, Rand's a big runner. I was running, and I was thinking about it. And I was like, you know what? If you're not willing to stand up and do something, it's not enough to complain. You have to actually do something. That's the standard, and that's the example you need to set for your young boys that you're raising, that if you see a problem in the world, you need to attach it. Judge McSpadden, bless his heart, who's since passed away, was very sick with cancer, didn't tell anybody for the last 8 years, but he only tried two cases when he was on the bench, and that court was a mess, and I've fixed it. And that's why I ran. That's why I'm continuing to run.
And then, unfortunately, he made some racist statements in like his last days on the bench, which was reflected poorly on a life of service. And then, if I remember correctly, he doubled down on them. And it was
very unfortunate. And I stood up, I gave interviews about it. What he said is abhorrent. He was basically equating race with certain characteristics, that race would equal this, and that because you're a different race, you're going to act differently and you're going to be a worse citizen of Harris County. Nothing is further from the truth. I don't believe that, and that's not the way I act on the bench. And I think if you asked anybody who knows me or practices in front of me, they would see that as well.
Sissy, this is directed towards you because we were talking a little bit about complexity of cases. Something that makes my and it already has a jump on it, but makes my hair fall out even faster, is that a lot of times I'm retained on a case and I file an achy motion. Do you have any hard and strict policy on that?
I don't have my policies in place just yet, as I stated earlier.
Okay. I would assume, since everyone you were representing was indigent because you were on an appointment list, is that, or the majority of people you were representing was indigent, is that correct?
Probably the majority. I would say the majority. Because some cases are, I am retained on some cases, but probably a lot of them are, of course, because I'm on the court-appointed will.
And how many achy motions have you filed?
I haven't filed any achy motions.
Okay. So...
I want you to...
Okay, Judge Warren.
Oh, no, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
I just want to tell you what my policy is. I was teaching at the criminal lawyers' capital murder CLA. I think more lawyers need to file them. I think it's, even when you have non-testifying experts, to understand some of the science, to understand blood spatter, gunshot residue. There's so many different things that they don't just teach you in law school. You need these experts. Even if you don't call them to testify, they're going to help you represent your client more effectively. Especially when it comes to cell phone towers, if you don't have that history. I was lucky enough to go to a CIA school in Hoover, Alabama, that taught judges about electronic communications. We got on the dark web, learned all sorts of interesting things, but it helps me as a judge, especially, and I encourage lawyers, you need this information. It's out there. Go hire these experts. Get these experts. It's important so you can represent your defendants.
And the reason why I asked Sissy is I was representing even though his family retained me, he was personally indigent in a sexual assault case, and I needed experts, and I filed an achy motion. And because I was retained and his family made bond, I was denied, even though my client was making about $35 a week. And I only asked for an investigator. So that's why I want to know if you had any policy on that, because that's a real sore subject with me. And I do indigent work in Chambers County, which I consider a great privilege, and it's rounded me out as an attorney. I think everyone should do appointed work at some time or the other. But all my work in Harris County is retained, and sometimes they can afford me. And I try to keep my fees very reasonable, but even with my reasonable fees, they can't afford an expert. So that's why I was asking you that, because that's so important to me.
Absolutely.
Because I literally had to pay the investigator out of my pocket, the case ended up being acquitted. But that's why I asked that. So let me ask you, what endorsements, if any, do you have?
I haven't received any endorsements. I didn't even screen. I'm not interested in endorsements. I know people who received zero endorsements and raked their opponents over the coals. I don't care about endorsements. The answer to your question is zero, and I did not screen for them.
Okay. And
the only endorsement I did screen for was HBAD, Houston Black American Democrats, but they endorsed him.
Fair enough. And the only campaign I've worked on was for someone at a national level. So Judge Warren, what endorsements do you have?
I have all of the endorsements. I've been endorsed over Ms. Kyles and over Mr. Johnson as well. Houston Chronicle just recently released right before the voting, who are the top.
Again, I did not screen with any of them, just to be clear. Because you said you received the endorsements over me as though we both screened for them, and we did not.
I received the HBAD endorsement over her. The fact that she is unwilling
that
to show
so
up.
That is so weird.
Ma'am, may I finish?
You may. Go ahead.
Thank you, ma'am. I've received every endorsement. Houston Chronicle, right before the election, said, these are the top Democrats, these are the top Republicans, these are the worst Democrats, these are the worst Republicans. I was one of the ones they signal out as the top Democrat to vote for, based on my policies, based on my record, based on my experience. Okay.
Congrats.
Thank you, ma'am.
One of the things that is always a concern having worked on someone who is, I believe, in their, at a national level, who is on their third primary, is funding to not only go against the fellow Democrat, but funding to go against the Republican once the election's over in May. What is your funding situation? Because if you do beat out Judge Warren, you're going to have to go against the Republican candidate.
Then I'll fundraise.
Okay.
And I mean, that's just the simple, logical answer is I will fundraise.
Okay. So, and I guess the simpler answer would be, which would be you just, and there's no right or wrong answer. I've never run for office.
Right.
I never thought I was enough of an academic to run for the bench when I was asked. But the, so you just haven't started fundraising yet.
No, I have not.
And have you started?
Yeah, I have an incredible grassroots campaign. I've had over 100 individual attorneys donate to my campaign, prosecutors, lawyers who practice in Harris County, lawyers who only do hired work, lawyers who do appointing work. I've been supported across the board by the whole legal community here in Harris County.
Sissy, and when a judge is voir diring the jury, in every Texas court I've been in but two, the judge will do jury selection, then he turns it over to the state and then the defense attorney. Mm-hmm. As a judge, what do you think it's the most important thing from the judge to elicit from that jury pool?
Well, the main thing to elicit, I would think, is, well, number one, whether or not they can decide each end of the spectrum as it relates to a specific, say, charge. So if it's a second-degree felony, can you consider both ends of the punishment range? Also, can they consider, maybe not rule for the death penalty, but can you at least consider it? So what's important is that they are impartial and that they can decide the case with impartiality. That's it. I mean, can you hear the evidence? Can you listen to the evidence and decide on it in an impartial manner without biases?
Judge Warren?
Yeah, and what I do is a little different. I try to educate the jury. I know what they're going to hear in their jury charges. I helped write the new set of jury charges that we currently use in Harris County. And I walk them through. This is the evidence you're going to need. This is the law that you have to rely on. Obviously, having them following it is good. But I need to give them the terms, the terminology, so that when you guys get up and you talk about it, because lawyers know the cases better than judges, they have the ground rules of what the law is and understanding of the law and how it's going to apply in that case in the beginning. So when you start talking about the facts, how they might apply, the emotions of the case, that's a lot different. And also, your answer on the death penalty is wrong. That is not the law. But
and would you correct us what you believe was misstated?
Absolutely. It's not whether or not you could or not. That is not the question that needs to be asked. It's actually a legal question. When we institute the death penalty in Texas, in
any
county.
Are we taking the bar exam here? I thought there were no wrong answers. You said there were no wrong answers. So.
Well, no, there. But apparently there.
The two questions the jury gets to put to him at the end of the case is not should this person get the death penalty. The first, they ask about whether or not this person is a continuing danger. And then the second question is whether or not you've heard sufficient mitigation, which would warrant justifying and saving his life. Those are the questions. It's not about whether or not you can consider the death penalty. They have to be able to answer those two questions. Those are the two questions they ask. If they answer them in a certain way.
Did you know
right
that
way,
before you were a judge?
Yes, ma'am. I tried actually death penalty cases before I was a judge. So I've tried two death penalty cases, once as a defense attorney and once as a prosecutor. So I had an idea.
What was your question again? Can we? What was the question? I've forgotten what the question was.
It was about voir dire.
It was about
voir dire
and what you thought was most important and what you think should be, and this is paraphrasing, elicited from the jury. Because in my experience, except for with a few judges, the judge is the first person to talk to the jury.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that there's certain things that they want to elicit that's important to them. And I asked you, and then I asked Judge Warren. Because I know that usually what I want the judge to elicit never comes out and I have to ask it, but that's probably my general black cloud that's been over my head since I was born. So anyway, but no, that's what I asked.
Okay.
Okay. And no, there aren't any wrong answers, but I think the law to the interview, but I think the law is the law. And if he took exception with something you said because the law was stated incorrectly.
Well, because you didn't ask me to state the law. You didn't ask me a legal question.
No, you actually volunteered it.
Yeah, but you asked me about Vore Dyer.
Correct.
That's specifically
but
what
then
you
asked
me
then
about.
You and I don't want to argue with you, but because you guys are doing fine by yourself. But no, because then you're the one who took it to the death penalty. I didn't. You're right. I didn't ask a legal question. I said a general question. Since I started out with you last time, I'm going to start with Judge Warren.
Yes, sir.
What's your feeling on alternative courts?
I'm all for them. I think anytime. I mean, the main goal of criminal justice, right? When someone comes in our court, it's this person should never come back to our court again if they're actually guilty, right? Is this someone we can rehabilitate? Is this someone we can get out of the system? This is why our numbers, our crime rate is down in Houston, I think, is because of our Democratic judges and the liberal policies we do have in place. Drug addicts are going to steal to feed their habit. They're going to break into homes. They're going to break into businesses. If we can get those people, clean them up, get them off the streets, get that away, that's perfect. I've never denied an application for a specialty court. Judges in Harris County have to sign off on them. I've never once said no. They're great. They deal with specific problems. We have a veterans court. We have mental health courts. We have a change through intervention court. We have a lot of different programs. I'm all for them, and they can help and keep people from coming back into our system, which is all what we want to do. And when it comes to – there are other people in our court who are the ones who, when they're convicted and we know they're going to be violent, they're going to be dangerous. They've committed murders, bad crimes, sexual assaults, aggravated robberies. When we put – it's putting those people – and unfortunately, there are some people we have that we have to lock up to keep our society safe, and it takes a judge with experience to do that.
What's your – Sissy, what's your opinion of specialty courts?
So I am an advocate of specialty courts for the simple fact, as I mentioned earlier, I worked for Harris County Probation for 10 years. My – first stint was with the SafePe Aftercare Group, which, of course, that is a special program. So there is a division of Harris County Community Supervision and Corrections Department called Special Programs. One of those special programs is the SafePe Aftercare, and that's where I worked prior to going to the sex offender unit. In addition to the sex offender unit, I also had experience with the girls' court, drug court, not so much with Veterans Court. I am working right now, hopefully, to try to see if we can bring a drug court to one of the other counties where I work right now. I'm sorry, a Veterans Court, because there are veterans there who are asking for it because they are familiar with the Veterans Court in Harris County.
And I know that speaking of chambers, that they, at least one judge, had no problem with a veteran going to Veterans Court here, but that fell apart for a number of other reasons. But it was a royal and respected reach. It just didn't work out like I would have thought. So, Sissy, asking, it's your turn. There seems to be a lot of hoopla over bonds. And do you think we have an actual problem or a perceived problem?
Well, I think on a case-by-case basis, it just kind of depends on if the problem is real or perceived. There are certainly some issues with bonds in Harris County. Personally, I just believe that the bond, they should just be handled on a case-by-case basis. That's the bottom line. I can't give you a specific answer as it relates to a specific bond. But if it's a case and I'm hearing the case, It just depends. It absolutely depends. Even in the counties where I work now, I mean, I see bonds and I'm like, okay, this doesn't make a lot of sense. And so I'm constantly filing motions for bond reductions because the bonds are so incredibly high because they're set by a magistrate sometimes. They're not set by the district court.
And what I'm concerned about when I'm not identifying myself as a third-rate radio host, but actually as a criminal defense lawyer, mm-hmm. the first thing that people talk to me about are bonds. I mean, it's like a hot topic. So that's why I came up. That's why I asked that question. Judge Warren?
Absolutely. This has been a huge issue in Harris County ever since I got on the bench. I actually joined the federal lawsuit to help overturn some of our bond practices in federal court that we've been dealing with in Harris County. I actually joined the bond lawsuit. The Honorable Judge Rosenthal, who's the Chief Justice of the federal courts here, said I was the model for bond reform in Harris County. I think it's a hot button issue. I think it's an easy button for the Republicans to push because crime sells well. But as we know, our crime is way down. Our violent crime is way down. I think we're down 25%. Our murders are down 30%. So I think it's a made up problem that just sounds really good. But the reality is that it's just not something that's happening. There's always going to be people out on bond who commit crimes. It's about being smart with the people we release. So if somebody has an ag robbery and they pick up another one, that person's never getting out in my court. If someone has a gun, I'm really big, you may not possess a gun while you're out on bond, and I hold people responsible for that. It's a big issue. It's something Republicans are pushing, but the data just doesn't back it up. If you look at the data of Harris County judges, the average bond on a murder case under Republicans was $50,000. As you know, back in the day, on their bond schedule, it is now on the average of $200,000 across Harris County. Democratic judges are being hard on crime. They're being hard on the right crimes. We're keeping the right people in, but also deferring and getting a lot of these people out of the system so they won't come back again. I think it's a made-up problem by the Republicans. I think it's something they're pushing because it's sexy. It sounds good on the news.
And so you feel like it's a perceived problem more than an actual problem.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
But I think it's something as judges we should be aware of. Like, this is something the community cares about. This is something the community has advocated about. We need to be smart about what we're doing. Like, if you watch Fox News, I'm not sure how many of your viewers do, I'm not on Breaking Bond. I'm not one of these judges who are letting the wrong people out to commit crimes, who to commit murders on bond. That's not the judge I am. It's 25 years of experience, which has helped that.
And I just happen to note that what a weird reversal. You called me sir since I've spent the whole time since you've been on the bench calling you sir. So, yeah, I will savor that moment. I don't even get that in my office or home. Okay. It is let me go ahead and do a quick station identification. This is Rand on Thanks to Feel Good Broadcast, 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston, Texas. And for those of you who are just joining us, we have judicial candidates, Judge Brian Warren and Yesidra Sissy Kyles here, both in the next runoff election for the 209th Judicial District Court in Harris County. Judge Warren, it's your turn. What is the worst experience you've ever had in court?
I have the funny ones that we all tell. I mean, I think the most tragic ones is we were trying this death penalty case, and the defendant's brothers came to testify, and just hearing about their lives and hearing about how he had two brothers, one of whom got out and has just struggled his whole life, and then the other one who's just kind of not gotten out. He's gotten in and out of prison. Now his brother's on death row. Just hearing about how some people have grown up and how tragic that is and how the system's failed people and they've led to this life of crime and violent, horrible crime. Those are the heartbreaking ones, but I've had plenty of funny stories. I had a guy on once who came on Zoom with no shirt on. I was like, and then when his attorney showed up, I said, tell your client he needs to put on a shirt. And he's like, I was wearing a shirt. What are you talking about? I was like, yeah, tattoos on your shirt, on your chest, don't you? He goes, you right. I was like, yeah, just put on a shirt, man. It's all, you're not in trouble. So we've had lots of funny stories, but the tragic ones, the ones that keep with you, are the children who've been molested, the ones who just hurt on your soul, and those violent crimes that just stay with you when you see families just torn apart on both sides.
And how has that affected you?
I think just in general, my wife tells me all the time, I take this too much of this home. I internalize this so much. Every time I send someone to prison, which is part of the job, and I understand it, and I understood it when I got it, it breaks my soul a little bit. It's all we do down here is take away time from people's lives. 10 years could be 10% of their life. It could be less. It could be 20% of life. And that's really the hard part of this job that I didn't realize going in, that, you can advocate for a sentence as a lawyer, and I've done it, you've done it, I'm sure Ms. Kyles has as well. But when you're there and you're the person sending someone to prison and making those decisions, or sending someone to prison or looking at someone when there's a victim's family who really wants them to go to prison, but you take a chance on them, put on probation, those are the decisions that, they stay with you just because they affect people's lives. And that just stays with me greatly.
And Ms. Kyles, what's your worst experience as a lawyer?
The worst experience? I don't know that I've had any really bad experiences, I would say what makes me most, I guess for lack of a better term, what saddens me in court is listening to the victim impact statements, both from DWI clients or DWI defendants, from those victims as well as sexual assault victims. So that is what saddens me the most, especially because I did work in the sex offender unit and I was a probation officer. And so I guess for all intents and purposes for in that position, I was really sort of a social worker. And so being on the other side of it, it's very different. And so to actually represent somebody as their probation officer versus representing them as their attorney in a sexual assault case is it's very different. And so to one of the hardest things, I think, is to sit next to a defendant or next to a client who has been found guilty or has even entered a guilty plea and to have to listen to the victims and to sit there with, you know, with no emotion is sometimes difficult.
And how has that affected you?
It's affected me greatly because, well, number one, it's one of the reasons I am where I am now. So people think you don't just wake up one morning and decide, hey, I want to be a judge. At least for me, I didn't. For me, it was a natural progression. And so what it has done for me, because I've seen things, I've seen people go to prison based on a motion to revoke hearing or a motion to adjudicate hearing when I knew that person was innocent. And the victims, the alleged victims, were in the courtroom saying, they really didn't do it. I really did make it up. Those are, and that is one of the cases that I have on appeal right now. Though I'm not running for an appellate bench, I do have this appeal pending right now. And so it's just, you know, the hardest part for me is seeing people go to prison who should not go.
Changing questions. In your years of practice, have you ever had a judge do something and you go, I will never do that in my court? And if so, what was it?
Yes.
And what is that?
But I would have to discuss a specific ruling. Very recently I had a case and I found out after the verdict, after sentencing, I found out one of the jurors was not from the county. And so I filed a motion for a new trial. But the judge didn't think that was an important enough issue to grant that motion. I thought that was an important issue, the fact that the person was not from the county and they served on the jury. And the fact that I found that out from the prosecutor, I thought that that should have landed a new trial.
So what will you never do in your court that?
What will I never do?
Or something you saw that you said you're not going to do in your court.
Well, one thing I am not going to do is if I see a motion for a new trial based on the fact that a juror was not from the county, I will very likely give that a very careful, you know, look over. I don't think that was something that should have been ignored. And so what I would not do is ignore something that seems that important.
And also, I guess when you've got a chance to voir dire the jury as a judge, you can go, anyone who doesn't live in Harris County?
Exactly. And that's what I thought about earlier when you mentioned when you mentioned voir dire.
Judge Warren, is there anything a judge ever did that you go, I am never going to do that in my court?
Absolutely. And I think it's the Feel Good podcast, so let's talk about the positive thing. Right? I think every person who becomes a judge, whether you thought about it or not, you have one judge who's really had that one impact on you. There's something he or she's done that has changed the way or affected the way you do things. For me, that's the Honorable Keith Ellison in federal court. I love the way he treats people. He has this practice of always shaking someone's hand after the case is over. He shakes the lawyer's hand. I do that after every closing argument in every single case. just because it recognizes how hard the lawyers have worked and understanding that you're just advocating for your client, but to recognize the heart and your soul that you're pouring into this case and that you've lived with for years before you got in this trial. It's just one of those things that's always affected me. Showing the respect for the court, and also showing the respect to the lawyers, as just as a judge, to come down and say, I appreciate your advocacy. I know how hard you worked. I know how hard this job is. I've been on both sides. And just let them know that I just appreciate their advocacy. When Keith Ellison did it with me the first time I was in front of him, it made a huge difference. And it's kind of changed the way how I do things. I think Andy Bell, my next door neighbor in the 185th, who's a wonderful judge and a good friend of mine, she spent so much time with Susan Brown. I think she has a lot of Susan Brown's good qualities. And I think the one judge who's affected you the most, however small or big or however long you spent with them, is probably who you're going to end up being like. And I just try to model myself on that, this wonderful human behavior that he did.
Judge, you were up for the final question. Let's try to tie it in to like a regular show. If I can recover some of my regular listeners, which
you
is
tuned out yet?
which is, if you had to thank one person who had a profound impact on your life, who's not a parent or a deity, who would that be?
I'm going to give a shout out to one of my very first chiefs of the DA's office and a dear friend to this day, a man named Feroz Merchant. And he taught me to treat everybody with respect, no matter who I am. You don't know who you're talking to. You don't know what these people have gone through. Treat everybody with respect. It's why I call you sir, even though I've known you for a very long time. It's just a matter of respect and showing that respect in court, that there's a way to practice in court and there's a way to treat other human beings. And that's just stayed with me my whole career. At least I hope it does.
Ms. Kyles, last question. If there's someone you want to thank for having a profound impact on your life who is not a parent or a deity, who would that be?
Not a parent or a deity. It would probably have to be, I would say it would probably have to be my son, for just keeping me on my toes, keeping me balanced, keeping me focused. I have a 22-year-old. And so, so I would have to say my son, Zachary.
Well, I will end that by saying, I always say that children and pets are what make us human. So on that note, good night, Andrea. Good night, Hayden. Good night, Avery. And good night to the two boys, Leo and Kobe. And to my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. You gave us your most precious commodity, which is your time. Judge.
Everybody shout out to their kids. I want to shout out to mine. Jake, Will, and Sam, thank you so much for being there. You are wonderful and wonderful boys.
Ms. Kyles.
And also have to shout out, again, my son Zachary here, and then I have a bonus son in Jamaica, RJ, so I have to shout him out too. He's probably not listening because he's 4 and he's probably not listening.
And I don't, and tell him he can pick it up on KPFT on the app.
Right.
Good night, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in, and we will be back next week with a new episode. Thanks
thank
again.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks appreciates Arden Studios and Big Star for the use of the song Thank You, Friends. Thanks is recorded in Barron Studios and KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, Texas. Our episodes are edited by Chris Alexander and the mixing staff at KPFT Radio. Thanks wants to thank you for listening to our broadcast. If there is someone you'd like to thank for having a positive and profound impact on your life, email us at thankspodcast@gmail.com. That's thnxpodcast@gmail.com.
Put your phone on D&D. That means that do not disturb when you're driving. And when you're going from point A to B, I need you to stay safe, please. So always sing with me. So put your phone on D&D. That means that do not disturb when you're driving. And when you're going from point A to B, I need you to stay safe, please. So always remember this beat.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Whoa, rock. Whoa. Easy, boy.
Whoa, that rock.
Whoa. Whoa, rock. Whoa. Whoa.
Hey now, KPFT listeners and members. KPFT turned 56 years old March 1st, and we're going to celebrate on March 29th with a crawfish boil. $75 is the cost of admission for one, $130 for two. Tickets are available at kpft.org or by calling 713-526-5738, option 1. Hope to see you out there as we pinch and peel. Your admission comes with unlimited crawfish, 2 drink tickets, and a heck of a good time.
And it ought to be a great day, I guarantee you.
See you out there, March 29th, Sunday, 1 to 5 p.m., 607 East Whitney. Get your tickets in advance. No tickets at the door. KPFT Houston.
KPFT Artist Profile.
Hi, I'm Carrie Melanson. KPFT has been completely, totally influential in my musical life, and I think the entire Houston music scene, it's a beacon for music, arts, songwriting, Americana, roots